I'm Ellen Mary.
And I'm Michael Perry.
And he's a plant geek.
And she's a plant addict.
And this is the Plant-Based Podcast.
This is more than just a gardening podcast. We'll be exploring the world of plants from every possible angle. We'll be talking about plant-based diets, plant materials and fabrics, the well-being qualities of plants, and giving plenty of gardening tips and tricks.
So we'll be chatting worldwide to companies and individuals that are being creative with plants in new and exciting ways, from fabulous flower crowns to foliage-filled lounges,
botanical moisturizers to bamboo clothing.
It's all here.
And it's all made of plants.
Sutton's, suppliers of gardening products since 1806, sponsor the Plant-Based Podcast. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Okay, Keely, we're here in the middle of Hoxton, aren't we, in Plates?
You are, welcomed.
It's lovely, and I'm sitting obviously opposite you, but behind you, that you've got this beautiful wall as well.
Yeah, it's all made from dried flowers.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and it's kind of the pride and joy of, when you walk in, it's a real feature at the back of the room.
Mm. Yeah, it is.
And people love it. At night, it creates little shadows off each kind of flower, and yeah, we've got a beautiful array of colours and... Yeah, yeah.
It's, and it's all plants, and we love plants.
Yeah, we
love
plants.
And plants are the only thing you eat here, aren't they?
Yeah, that's
where,
right.
But where did it all begin? You know, give us some background.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's been a real personal journey for us. When we first kind of started thinking about opening our own restaurant, it was probably like 10 to 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm. And it's you and your brother, isn't it?
That's correct. And we do have another partner as well, Jack, who joined us. And he's kind of our drinks kind of specialist and also... has a restaurant background. So, but yeah, initially Kirk and I kind of grew up in the restaurant industry ourselves. Our father's a Michelin star chef and has a restaurant and hotel in the north of England. So he, we kind of grew up around his passion, and I think, it was contagious, essentially. And
we rubbed off on you.
Yeah, we both got the bug. As much as I tried to fight it, I kind of went off into advertising and ran a design studio for the past kind of 5 years before starting Plates. So we kind of, Kurt went off, Kurt was has kind of been training as a chef since he was 15, trained by our father for 4 years, then came to London, worked at The Square under Phil Howard and some of London's best restaurants, and then went over into, over to Australia. And kind of, you know, Kirk's super ambitious and has always wanted to work with the best and be around the best and learn from the best people. So he went to work at Key, which is another fantastic restaurant in Sydney. And whilst he was there, he contracted Lyme disease. So as our plans had always been kind of brewing around this time, which this was like 7 years ago now, his health over the last kind of, 7 years has kind of took a big turn. And so that's really impacted the way that our business ended up kind of being led by, originally was necessarily not going to be fully plants. We always were really keen to lead with plants and, you know, but now it's 100% plant-based. And it's because Kirk's inspired by Kirk's personal diet. So as when he fell ill, with Lyme, it's a progressive thing. So you start with a cold and then, you know, if you don't realise what's happening, it's a slow process to becoming quite poorly. So as he... was getting kind of seriously ill. He then started to look at what things he can do to help himself because it's not very well kind of known, even, you know, in the NHS and things. So he was looking for support. He was looking to how he can help himself. And he started to learn about how a plant-based diet could really help him. So he tried, first of all, cutting out, you know, red meat and cutting out dairy. They really, really helped a lot, and they were definitely like exacerbating his symptoms and making everything much more severe. So as he replaced them for plants and replaced them for vegetables, he started to see the symptoms ease a little bit. So he then, obviously, with this kind of encouraging signs, went fully plant-based, and since then it's you know, sometimes out of difficult situations come kind of revelations and new ideas. So from the back of that, we at this time when his diet was starting to change, which was about 3 years ago, we were then, this was when our kind of discussions about opening a restaurant and having a business together were starting to kind of really amplify. We were like, you know, looking at how we can, where we can do this, you know, how is it possible? Because he obviously was ill, and it was like, how can we run a restaurant that's not as demanding on him physically? So we started to think about, I'd been, as I mentioned, running a design studio with my husband. So I'd kind of gained a lot of skills over 5 years running a creative studio and doing a lot of kind of creative direction for brands and, you know, very much rooted in the design world. But then I thought, if we join forces, bring that skill set, but actually root everything in food and nature, you could actually have a studio that's creating kind of content and creating creative campaigns and interesting kind of collaborations with brands.
Yeah.
And it champions food and nature. So all you need is brands that are interested in that, or uh-huh. clients that are interested in that. And that's basically where the idea began. So then we knew if we could find a space that would allow us to have a dual purpose space where we could transition it into a weekend mm-hmm. restaurant. Mm. That would allow Kurt to run a restaurant
okay.
and allow us to have this time in the week where we could manage our own time, and it would be much less demanding on Kurt physically. Mm-hmm. But then it was, you know, a quick idea that then wrote, you know, steamrolled into kind of like,
these oh, things do sometimes.
Yeah, we've got a space. Yeah, and, yeah, so that's kind of how it happened.
It really sounds like you're ahead of the curve,
it
though.
It does, yeah.
Yeah, in terms of plant-based trends.
That, yeah.
Yeah,
but you were there for a completely different reason.
Yeah, and it was a completely organic. We were trying to find a solution for Kirk's dream, you know, for us to kind of still fulfil our dreams, but for Kirk's dream particularly, to have a restaurant in some way and to still make that happen. So Jack joined us really early on. He works again in like some of the best restaurants, the Clover Club in London, and has a brewing background as well. So he was really kind of keen to join. So then the three of us, we were like, actually, we've got something really special here. Cool. And as we started to really kind of talk and work with other people who had, you know, similar kind of visions, early on, we had a couple of brands such as Aesop who really saw the vision of the food studio. Mm-hmm. We started to create and get photographers in here and create beautiful kind of campaigns mm-hmm. and all rooted in nature and plants.
I love that.
Because you do two separate things here, because like in the day and during the week, you're training chefs in plant-based cooking.
Well, yeah, we're doing development and we have chefs in here that work with Kurt, but the food studio essentially is the week. So in the week, Monday to Friday is where we are developing dishes for ourselves or for other people. Mm-hmm. So if we've got an event that's a big event that's bespoke and they want something really special and it's all about, you know, a certain theme, our development, because if you imagine we're only cooking with plants, but the end result is not to, we don't serve a lot of raw dishes. So we actually, our standard is to replicate the kind of fulfilling meal that you'd have when you go to any Michelin star restaurant. So you have a lot of hot dishes. So the development time is quite lengthy. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at 2 to 3 weeks minimum for any dish.
Okay.
So that takes a lot of development time. So that's all happening in the week. Plus the creative campaigns. So coming up with concepts for brands. So the whole everything from ideation to end delivery happens here. We're filming and doing the photography for those campaigns.
Mm-hmm. All based around food and nature,
exactly.
All in here.
And mainly nature and plants is the kind of the draw for people and for brands. And it's working really well. And I think we're creating something kind of quite unique.
But not open to the public apart from just one night a week.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And that's again because of the development time and the time it takes to cook the dishes. So actually we start on a Thursday prepping for the Saturday. It takes 3 days to serve,
that's
to make
amazing.
The meals for the Saturday.
You need to book
service.
In sometime,
we
darling.
Do. It makes it sound really exclusive as well, doesn't
I think
it?
But not in a pretentious way. It's like anyone, I think if you know, we've got, started to get some reviews on Google and the people that everyone's kind of commented on how warm and welcoming we are, and that's absolute for me, like, and parcel of our DNA. We are welcoming and friendly, and we want people to come and have a great time. And
definitely.
You know, they really do. When this, you know, when this space kind of transitions into a restaurant, it's really brilliant, and you've got the music on, and it's got a really good vibe. So,
what I love is from the front door, you can't tell what is inside here, it's just an unassuming door to you know.
Yeah.
What looks like a block of apartments, really, and then suddenly you're in this amazing space.
Yeah. So how we found you via social media.
Amazing.
As we do many places, of course, which is fantastic. Other than social media, out there in the big wide world, how well has it been received, do you think?
Yeah, really good. I think a lot of, and I think this is one of my proudest moments, is that it's word of mouth that's helped everything build. And I think when we've had, you know, when we have every week the restaurant on a Saturday, people then tell their friends that we've got a lot of repeat customers. Mm. And we have this one family, for example, who own a jewellery shop on Brick Lane, just off Brick Lane. And they've been to eat with us two or three times, I think three times now, and they came, it's like one of them, you know, the husband's 40th birthday, and then it was the mum's 50th, 60th birthday, grandma's, and they keep coming back, and it's so, so lovely. And that's just, that's one of my biggest kind of, the things I enjoy the most is the brilliant word of mouth and when people just really get how much we're putting into this and how much it takes to achieve kind of this really detailed, incredible plant-based experience.
Yeah. But people must be... they must finish their meal and be I'm sure I ate meat because it's obviously so filling. You've created these amazing dishes,
and that's the idea
that are trying to sometimes emulate a meaty dish or
and I think it's for us, we don't ever use things like seitan. That's not our, we're not using replicate, like things that are going to replicate meat in that way, but what we are doing is trying to create with plants fulfilling elements of that dish. So so definitely like a certain dishes we've got at the moment, that we've got wild mushroom and artichoke risotto, and that is, you know, using mushrooms that are like the beefsteak mushroom at the moment is incredible, and its texture is almost like if you cook it a certain way, you almost cook it like a rare steak, and it's incredible. And so it is trying to bring fulfilling textures to the table that meat eaters don't then miss.
Really cool. I don't eat meat, so this is amazing to me, and I'm trying really hard to get my husband to not eat meat as well. So, you know, feeding him something that's totally filling, you know, and deliciously tasty as well, but it's plant-based, is perfect, isn't it?
How do you get hold of your ingredients, though? Do you use some really unusual vegetables and plant material?
Yeah, so Kirk forages quite a lot. I mean, he, like, now the weather's changed, I don't know.
Is he out foraging right now?
You're staying in the wall that sent him out.
Yeah, but no, we've been over the summer, for example, foraging a lot, and we love meadow sweet and woodruff. And
what do you do with those?
So with the meadow sweet, we dry for one use. We put it in coconut yogurt and things like that. We sweeten. We use it to flavour and enhance things. So we've got some kind of fabulous ways in which we use kind of herbs in different ways and forage plants. But the mushrooms, like I mentioned, we're getting, they're from an amazing supplier called the Wild Room.
Okay.
And they're doing fantastic kind of things in bringing new produce kind of constantly to the table and bringing them to London and from far and wide. So they also bring us a lot of sea herbs and things like that. So we've got these incredible kind of... Because for us, again, like the herbs, the dried herbs, sorry, that we forage, the sea herbs, they season a lot of our dishes, for example, because they're quite salty, for example. So we can use them to kind of add flavouring and seasoning to our dishes. So, yeah, it's really important for us to have an amazing variety of, kind of ingredients.
That's really interesting. I wonder if you know Nurtured in Norfolk. We've also had them on the plant-based podcast. Yeah. They do a lot of...
I don't know them.
Unusual edible flowers, but also some sea vegetables. They've got the oyster leaf plant as well.
Yeah.
Lots of those.
Yeah, lovely additional flavour. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's just a whole world of flavours out there.
Yeah. You can create something so special without meat, can't you?
Exactly. You really can. And I think it's just, like I say, it just takes a bit of extra time and thought, that's all. And I think the biggest thing that Kirk always really says is, once you've cracked it, once you've understand what flavours in vegetables work together, you know, it's like anything. What's like riding a bike? You're there with it. I think it just takes a bit of time, and I think he always encourages people to, you know, do a bit of experimenting, and then you're sorted for life, really, once you've mastered a few key flavours and played around and worked out what you like. But I think it is, like you say, it's getting more unusual ingredients to kind of brighten up.
Definitely. And I mean, in the second section, we're going to ask you more about ingredients and recipes that people can try at home. But I've got a question before we move on, and I want to know if there's, you may not be able to tell us, but obviously it's quite a trendy looking restaurant, you see a lot of it on social media. Do you get people coming here because they've seen it online? Maybe do you get some famous faces in here as well?
We've had lots of famous chefs.
Okay.
Chefs that have come, and in terms of, no, we haven't had any like pop stars yet. I mean, I know that
we're your first pop star.
Yeah, you are.
I'm happy to perform for a plate of food.
You're just 50% of Bananarama, aren't you?
we've only actually been open fully since kind of like February, March. So we're still kind of getting the word out. But yeah, we have, the great thing is, yeah, we are having a lot of chefs are hearing about us, and a lot of, you know, kind of people locally, and then people travelling across London. And my better for me than a famous person right now is I had this two ladies that flew in from Sweden last week.
No way.
And I honestly couldn't, I had to do a double take. I said, she said, oh, we've turned up, we've flown in from Sweden.
I hope they booked online.
I must be hearing things. And she said, sorry, where have you come from? And she said, oh, we've come from Stockholm. And I said, oh, what, to eat here tonight? And she said, yeah. And she was like, we're massive foodies and we're...
Were they Swedish pop stars?
Yeah, I know, maybe they were.
Ace of Base.
I couldn't believe it. So, yeah, we are... the door is open for, you know, Gigi Hadid and Zayn to come back in. And,
okay,
you know,
we'll give them a shout.
Give them a shout. Well, that's excellent. Thank you so much. And we'll be back in a little while to talk about ingredients and what people can do at home. I think it's very true for all of us, many people certainly, that sometimes life-changing situations, you can create real opportunities from them, can't you? And that's guys have done.
And a difference to your health.
Absolutely.
And this is real testament to that, that, you know, a plant-based diet works. And it was almost medicine for Keely's brother in his, you know, journey, you know, following the diagnosis of his illness.
Yeah, that's right. And I think that happens a lot. You know, people who suffer from many different health conditions, diseases, viruses, that they suddenly think, oh, you know what, now it's time to take charge of my own health. Mm. And that's when plants come in.
I know, but I do just... I hate how we are so conditioned and how we're brought up to, you know... to go for processed food, and it's so easy to grab, and it's and I know it's changing a little bit and you see more plant-based material, but it's always seems so much more tempting. You gotta admit it, like Ellen, if you tell me you don't, and I won't believe you, that the things they sell at Greggs, the pastries and, you know, cheese and onion pastry, are just so delicious, and you just want to grab them more than you would a broccoli salad,
okay.
Let's be honest.
I'm going to be honest with you.
Oh, don't. I don't believe
I
you.
Do not eat from Greggs. Yeah. Nothing against Greggs. My husband loves Greggs, but I don't eat meat. I'm really conscious of what I am eating. And the more we talk to people about plants and their benefits, the more I realise that I must avoid convenience.
But I would still have a craving for that processed stuff, I guess, because there's so many additives
sugar.
In there. That
It's the sugar in them. It is an addiction. We are addicted to sugar. And marketing out there, you know, it draws us to
but
all of the bad stuff.
I don't think I can ever kind of turn away from that fully, as much as I do love to eat plants. But, of course, what we're learning at Plates Restaurant is that they can actually play with plants and get into those flavours and create things that are comparable to processed food. So maybe with that kind of arsenal, I would be up for a plant-based diet.
Well,
Let's see.
I'm all in. I'm in for the plant-based diet. I'm incorporating more into my cooking all of the time. I don't eat meat anyway. So for me, this is really interesting, and I cannot wait to hear what ideas Keely has got for us that we can make at home.
Maybe there'll be a lovely plant-based salad with a pastry on the side. So now we're going to look at a specific plant-based dish that you guys have created here at the restaurant. So can you give us one example of a dish and how you guys have created that, how long it takes, and ideally then give us an example that people can replicate at home?
Sure. The creative process for our dishes is quite, as I said, it's quite lengthy, and that's like a real, you know, we start off as a team kind of coming up with ideas. A lot of the time, you know, Kurt might have an idea that he's been working on, and then we kind of perfect it together in terms of just initially in terms of the concept.
And do you work well together in that process?
Yeah, we really do. We've got the same, totally got the same vision.
Mm-hmm.
No sibling rivalry.
No, definitely not. It's actually all like channeled into the greater good. You know, he sometimes gets a bit annoyed if I try and get in the kitchen or take over. You know, I can't do that. So I've got some boundaries. But, you know, yeah, we made it when we were developing one of our kind of, I suppose, signature dishes that is as stunning kind of visually as it is to eat. That's a layered coconut jelly. Okay. With licorice, it's actually got carrots that's cooked in mandarin juice, then dehydrated and made into like sticky kind of sweets. So it sounds really strange, but if you imagine, yeah, this eating kind of like a gel-like kind of carrots been transformed into a mandarin kind of beautiful citrus flavour.
Wow. I'm dribbling here.
It's really, really delicious. And then we layer really wafer-thin coconut jelly over the top, and then we put coconut yogurt in the middle, and then we've got like a mandarin granita, and then underneath like a licorice gel. And with that dish, it took kind of about 2 months to get really right. And so you've got these kind of wonderful textures and flavours, but the final thing we were kind of like working on was this other flavour, and the licorice in the end was the thing it was missing. And that was like Kirk had got it to this point, and then we were like, what other things? And sometimes it's like, because we know I understand what he's trying to achieve with this dish, then I can come up with an idea and say this will work, or you know. So we kind of together, we really work well in that way. And so that's an example of something that's been developed here, and that took kind of like 5 or 6 iterations before we got it to really where we wanted it to be. That's a really special
thing.
And
then do you have anyone that tests it outside yourselves?
I mean, so there's Kirk, Jack and I, so there's 3 of us. So no, not really. We are seriously, like, our standards are so high, and we're quite very critical of our own work. So, you know, I will, kind of tell Kirk, might say 5 times it's not right, and he'll say himself 5 times it's not right. So we are hard on ourselves. So yeah, I think that's enough.
This is a far cry from the nut roast that I had to eat as a teenager.
Yeah,
believe me.
That's where what we're fueled from, to make something that's completely the opposite of that and make something so special and so deliver food that's really kind of makes people say wow.
Yeah.
You know, and but also it's got a homely element that it feels kind of like you want to eat it again. For us, mine and Kirk's most important thing is, when you eat that dish, do you want to eat it again? Do you crave more? Because that's a sign of a great dish.
When I feel that in McDonald's anyway. Yeah. I'm just a pig.
Craving more plants is what it's all about. Yeah. And you just think that those amazing flavours and all that creativity that's gone into it, you are eating full-on goodness for your body.
And I think that's, you've hit the nail on the head. The skill that Kirk has that he's doing that he does so well is he extracts the flavour to the to the highest degree, and then sometimes even then re-implants it back in and keeps heightening that flavour, but all from natural goodness. So
because a lot of people out there that don't follow a plant-based diet or don't have respect for plants assume they haven't got any flavour, don't they?
No, exactly.
But there's so many flavours in the natural world.
Going back to nut roast, it's like how you cook a Brussels sprout. You know, you can absolutely an Iowa Brussels sprout. It's the most disgusting thing, and then you can eat. Come and eat here and try Kirk's food, and you see how it's like.
And you will love your sprout.
Yeah.
So whilst this is all very amazing, but we're not all chefs, and we've not had a Michelin background in any way, shape or form. So what kind of things could we create at home, perhaps?
Sure. There's a really good dish on the menu at the moment that I think is fantastic to create at home, but also could be a really nice starter for Christmas, I was thinking, because it's quite festive looking. So it's a beetroot tartare. Mm-hmm. So essentially it's really finely diced beetroot to create almost like the steak tartare look. And we salt bake that. So you salt bake it for an hour with a dough, salt dough. This recipe is actually about to go out on our newsletter in about a week. So
sign up, everyone.
If people want to sign up to the newsletter on the website, then it's plates-london.com. We can we're going to start sending recipes to create that you can cook at home. So the beetroot's baked in like a salt bake crust for an hour, and then just diced, and then we add, so you buy seasonal red currants, so at the moment they're really, really lovely, and then, so we make an avocado cream, super simple, 3 avocados to 1 lemon, blitz it, and then just put little dollops, I mean, Kurt does it like with a piping bag, but you can just with a spoon, so put some dollops throughout the beetroot kind of dye that's diced on the plate, the dollops of avocado, dotting through red currants, and then just make some croutons, and there you go. And that's really delicious, beautiful textures, and really will impress people.
You can grow your beetroot at home.
Definitely.
You can grow your red currant. Yeah. I've never grown an avocado.
No. You're right.
So but you can create a lot, can't you?
Yes.
By growing your own at home and then creating these really tasty, good for you dishes.
Yeah, definitely.
But do you know what? We're talking about this, but I just know that I've still got friends, you know, in my hometown that would just be, what? I'm not going to eat that. Do you know what I mean? Mm. I just want to have this, you know, they're probably... I used to eat lots of raw food in the office when I worked in an office environment. Yeah. And I would have these kind of like... you know, big Tupperware containers of roasted vegetables, all this healthy stuff.
Yeah.
And they will say to me, oh, you're eating such rubbish, as they're holding a pasty or a sausage roll. Why are people so reluctant to embrace a plant-based diet? Is it the cost? Is it the unknown? Is it the fact that they don't feel as healthy for them? What are the barriers?
It's the biggest growing market there in terms of, you know, it's on the rise.
But in the cities, not necessarily in the smaller towns, would you say?
I think it is, you know, London, you know, London is the key city that I suppose plant-based diets. I think it's like we, you know, mentioned maybe earlier that young people, for sure, it's becoming, much more attractive. But I think it's about small steps. I think it's what puts people off is when you try and preach or kind of force something down people's throats. I think for us, it's about entertaining people with plants and entertaining them in this new way of eating that doesn't have to be eaten every day. So my advice is, I think, you know, let people eat what they want, when they want, but try and encourage more plants and encourage more vegetables through kind of more creative cooking.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I think it is on the rise, and I think more and more people that I meet, you know, of all ages and all kind of diets and backgrounds, are starting to eat less meat and or eating better quality meat. And I think that's the driver. It's about trying to get people to eat organic or eat, you know, better quality meat, and it's less often and better quality, and try and eat more plants because it's so much better for the environment, but it's better for, you know, it's better for us to have a balanced diet.
Of course, I think it's media led greatly, our diets. Just put this out there. We get lied to a lot, you know. You look at TV adverts, you never see anyone advertising plants to eat, do you? But you see meat to eat. And we are very much media led, and that needs to change in order to make this kind of change within our lives and within our diets.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
Because, you know, obviously eating a plant-based diet is so good for you, isn't it? For your body and for your mind. And something I just wanted to maybe explore with you again, what you were saying about Kirk and how this all started in the first place. Obviously, the diet came from wanting to be better, to heal a little, or make yourself feel better. But I'm wondering also, because when you work with plants and you touch plants and you understand the process of growing the plants and where they come from and all of that, that's good also for your mental health, well-being too.
Yeah, definitely.
And if you're going through something like Kirk has been through, do you think that that process is also helping on top of the goodness from the diet? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally do. And I think, I think when we kind of slow down or stop eating convenience foods, that's better for our minds. So we're taking care to make dishes, you know, ourselves and set aside an hour or two to make something special, whether that's, you know, from the garden
or going
to an organic shop and buying good ingredients and then coming home and just making something that yourself that you know is really good for you. And I think, again, it's just coming back to the balance. I think if you can try and encourage more of that within your families and... when you dine out, sometimes to having options that try something on the menu that's vegetarian or that's... Because the restaurants, especially in London at the moment, and, you know, we're from near Manchester, the standard of food now is so much better in the restaurants.
Yeah,
it is. Standards of vegetarian food has changed so much.
In Norwich, it's very much on the menu, if you like, definitely.
I think that shows there's so many solid, really good quality pubs, restaurants, that are really taking care to grow their own vegetables. And, you know, so again, I think it's, you know... It's becoming. I think it's here to stay, and I think more people are realizing.
Well, I mean, we are taught, aren't we, that we have to eat meat to get protein, or we have to eat whatever to get carbs. But we can get all of that from plants, can't we?
Yeah, and I think it's really prescriptive, though. I think, you know, I think it's important that some people, depending on what their kind of personal needs are, do sometimes, you know, need a different variety of diet. And I think, but for Kirk, you know, and the journey that he's been on, it's really helped his symptoms a lot. And I think it's when people have certain illnesses, I think dairy and meat are particularly, they aggravate things. And symptoms, you know, and especially that was the case for Kirk. So I think it's really about trying what works best for you and trying a plant-based diet. And even if, I think for some people it works really well to have an 85% plant-based, 90% plant-based diet. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, all fantastic if, you know, more and more of us are trying to eat more plants and they're healing us or helping us feel better.
I guess the issue often is the convenience, but there's a few companies out there now making plant-based ready meals, isn't there? Have you seen some of those?
I have, yes.
Yeah, and they're doing really good stuff. And so I wonder if, have you seen like a difference in the mainstream? Have you seen some of the major supermarkets offering some of those more convenient plant-based meals at all?
Yeah, definitely. I know we did an event with Bol here, and they, they're obviously doing, you know, they're in all the supermarkets
now. Oh, they have the salad pots, don't they?
Yeah, they're also doing, they do the hot meals, I think, as well. Okay. Where you've got, like stews and different, so they're in all the supermarkets. But yeah, I think more and more, you know, actually in our family, our father's just about, he's got a range of hot pots where he was famous for Lancashire hot pot, but he's actually doing, he's been developing his vegetarian range. Yeah. And that's been really, really interesting for him because, you know, he really cares that they're amazingly delicious and that there is a really nice range for vegetarian options. So, I think that more and more the supermarkets need to supply really good quality vegetarian options. And I think more as people also don't, you know, they understand that quick convenience meat is actually obviously completely the worst, and that they may be eating that 80% plant-based and maybe on the weekend they're buying something that's organic or, you know, they know where it's come from and it's good quality. I think then you've got another 5-6 days in the week where people want convenience but plant-based meals. So I think, it's going in the right direction.
I think the supermarket's definitely changing how they market stuff to us.
So,
you know, with the kind of gluten-free and the extra protein, they're starting to put that on so much packaging now.
Well, they, like you said, I mean, they're the same as me. They'll go wherever the money is. And again does show the trend is not just a trend that's a fad. It's been going, people have been, you know, there's the rise in people going vegan and vegetarian has been on the up for the last 5 years and it is still increasing. So I think the supermarkets will continue to invest in that.
Hopefully so, because the proof is out there. There's research to prove that plant-based diets can help you in many different ways.
They do help a lot of people mentally as well as physically.
Exactly.
So do we believe it's here to stay then, this plant-based trend?
Yeah, I think so. I definitely think so. Mm. And I think there's more and more, you know, every week or 2 weeks you read about another business or another restaurant that's opening that are leading with plants and it's super exciting. I think it's and as many, you know, there's so many restaurants opening all the time.
I hope it just becomes a lifestyle rather than a trend. Do you know what I mean? And the trend is great because if the trend makes that lifestyle happen, that's wonderful.
And I think it's the people who are kind of shout a lot about, you know, either veganism or trying to convert people, obviously they're trying to get the message out, but they sometimes scare off the people, you know, but obviously they're shouting loud because, you know, we're trying to get a message out there, for example. But I think once, you know, because it's already, I think, widespread the message now that plant-based is really great for you and it does help a lot of people, that as it becomes more mainstream, the people who are doubters might start to investigate it a little bit themselves and think, actually, you know, well, it's not that bad, and it is, you know, really interesting in fact. So, but it's always been about balance for sure for me.
I like the balance.
Yeah.
That's definitely.
And letting people, you know, find out for themselves.
Yeah, and work it out themselves and love plants even more.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sitting here, Keely, and to my left I can see some bottles of what looks like wine. I'm a Now, with every tasty meal, a glass of wine goes down very well. Yeah. So you serve alcohol here as well?
Yeah, we partner with a couple of amazing local kind of wine shops that also work with amazing growers in Europe, mainly. We haven't explored kind of British wine and English wine, but we're mainly working with European producers that are growing kind of low intervention wines, so otherwise known as natural wines, so
that's
not
cool.
Adding so many sulfurs and trying to keep things really organic. So a lot of the farms we use, they're all organic.
they might not be certified because they're really small. They maybe can make maybe making 100 to 500 mm-hmm. bottles. So the organic certification is very, very expensive. But they're all organic. They're amazing small producers, and they're creating amazing kind of different incredible wines.
Wonderful. Wine is plant-based as well.
Yeah, so.
It's all okay.
Exactly. But yeah, it's incredible actually what can be made out of it. I learned recently that there's... you can actually make out of the residue of the wine, grape, mm-hmm. the grape skins, actually leather can be made. So there's now companies really? That are taking the waste from some of our kind of growers that we work right. with in Italy, for example.
It's and amazing.
There is so much more to come from plants, isn't there? We're definitely. Still finding
we're
it
we're really investigating at the moment what we can do with our waste. And I think it's, again, another kind of thing that seems to be kind of very trendy or topical at the moment, but it's such a big issue. Obviously waste, and we're looking at how when we've got, for example, tomato skins, we've started to make like bases kind of canvases for our dishes to be mm-hmm. served on. So kind of inspired by like drying flowers, we dry vegetables and so the dehydrator is a piece of kit that we use all the time and love. You kind of get creative in that way as well, with playing around with
it's what, very artistic, isn't it?
That's from my background as well in the creative studio, and bringing kind of like how you can make and create and bring that more again into the restaurant world. So
perfect blend.
Fabulous.
Wow. Well, thank you very much, Keely, and it's so fun to spend some time in Plates Restaurant, and we're definitely going to book in when we can.
Definitely.
Where can we find you online, though? You've mentioned the website. We can also find you on social media.
So Instagram is our main kind of social media. We are on Twitter as well and Facebook. But, Plates_London.
Wow, and people should just look on the website for when the next batch of availability is
absolutely.
In terms of appointments.
And sign up to the newsletter.
That is brilliant.
And we do private events for individuals. Okay. It's not just big brands or kind of clients that we're working with from business kind of perspective. It's actually private, events in people's homes or special creations for birthdays, for example.
Do you do takeaways?
We're definitely not starting that as well.
That's brilliant. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's really good. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Michael, can you put your phone down, please?
Oh, get out of my face. I'm minimising my apps, ready to talk to you.
Feisty.
But it's such a modern predicament where we look at someone on a phone and we think that they're not paying attention. But come on, in the old days, everybody sat around reading books and newspapers. That doesn't mean they were attentive to each other. I've seen plenty of pictures of lots of commuters reading their newspaper on a train. They're not being social.
That's very
What's the difference?
I've never thought of it like
exactly.
that, actually.
But think about it. Your phone these days, there's so much on there. So even if you're sitting around with a group of friends, you might be on your phones because you might be showing someone a picture of something. You might be, I don't know, showing them a new app or
it's
something.
Social so it's social in a different way.
It is. That's damn right, Ellen. It really is. It's social in a different way.
And you've
you've hit the nail on the head there, and you've got something right for a change. So.
I enjoy social media for a change. I enjoy social media very much. I like to have a bit of a balance. I'm not on it all of the time because I love nature.
Even if you were, why feel that guilt?
I don't feel guilt.
No, but you're saying,
I talk obviously a lot about well-being and being outside with nature, so I live that, so I try and get that balance. Well, I do, but without being on social media... You're laughing at me. I love that you're laughing at me.
Without, I just felt like you're backtracking.
No, without social media, I wouldn't have made the links that I've made. Yeah, I've got so many friends via social media now. And also, in reality, I have these friends who I've met via social media.
And also it's helped us spread the word about the podcast as
well.
Completely, yeah, and we obviously handle ourselves on there as professionally as can be. And apart from the odd shirtless selfie.
I was going to say pantless.
Your one's not mine.
I'm going to be blatantly honest. Unfortunately, some people do send photographs that they shouldn't.
Of what? Weeds and stuff?
Bindweed.
Or the bark of trees?
Sometimes.
That's unsolicited.
Unsolicited photographs, private photographs, are not
welcome. So there's some downsides to social media, let's face it.
Oh, you've turned everything X-rated all of a sudden.
But it's true, it happens.
But what else is unwelcome on social media?
Competitiveness.
Yeah.
I don't like that.
Yeah. Do you know what I really hate? The real kind of... what do you call it, like Instagram by numbers accounts, like this, you know, those wide brim hats that you can get.
Yeah,
I call them Instagram hats.
Okay.
Because you've always got boys and girls going out there having their picture taken, like looking over a, you know, into a field or at a cliff, and they're kind of like with their back turned to the camera, they're holding the hat at the back, and it's like they're just wearing their Instagram hats all day, and it's just like, oh my god. So I prefer when people are creative and looking at things in a slightly different way to the most. And they're the type of accounts I like to follow.
I think that's what Instagram was created for in the first place, wasn't it?
But then I guess some people aren't creative and they are then just maybe copycat and stuff. So
I think it's a great platform for putting your message out there, you know?
But could that message be an ad? What do we think of ads? Because there's a lot of talk about... ads on Instagram
The new rules. So if you're gifted something and you post about it, you have to say it's gifted. And if you've been paid for something, you have to say ad and make it very clear. And I don't care if someone's been gifted something or paid. I don't care.
We're choosing to follow that person anyway.
Yeah.
And of course, we're not so naive. People do get products given. People with larger followers will get these things gifted. That's kind of how the world works. I don't know why we have this guilt about making money and marketing in the UK sometimes.
Yeah.
But what is annoying is those Instagram-sponsored adverts. If I could turn those off, I would. If I could unfollow those, I bloody would.
Because you do see adverts that you're actually not interested in whatsoever.
Exactly. They're the ones I'd like to control. But if there's someone I'm willingly following... who has been gifted something or is doing an ad for something.
That's then, happy for them, you know. Yeah. It's all good. And we can make our own minds up whether we want to buy something or not. I think, you know, that all came out from like the Kim Kardashians of the world, because obviously they make hundreds, if not more, thousands of pounds for each post, don't they? So Instagram decided that we needed to make it clear what was gifted and what was an advert.
But also, like, sometimes when people go on a complete tangent with what they're advertising, that isn't great. So, like, yeah, obviously we're horticulturalists, we're gardeners. If we suddenly then advertised, I don't know, a type of bookshelf, that's not going to work, is it? And just be a bit cheesy and weird. So, anyone like that, I'd unfollow. Yeah.
All in all.
Unless it's a plant-based bookshelf. Oh, I guess it is anyway, because it's made of wood. But it's got an aluminium one. Yeah.
Almost everything. Where do we go with that one? Overall, the horticultural community on social media is pretty cool, right?
Yeah. It's very, of course there's things that are a bit irritating from time to time. But I do like the positivity of it and the fact that we can learn from each other as well.
I'm constantly learning stuff through being on Instagram.
It's really... What's the last thing you learnt then? You're like, I'm always learning.
No, I am always learning. So there was a plant that I found in Singapore when I was there last year.
Yeah.
And I had this photograph of it. It was really beautiful. And I'm now not going to be able to tell you what it is, but I'll show you a photograph afterwards. And it was red. This is going to test you. And it was like the bottle brush, but it wasn't the bottle brush.
Was it the spherical one?
Yes.
The round one.
And I didn't know what it was called, okay? Yeah. And it was in my mind every now and again that I would maybe look it up. Never did. I can't remember the name. But somebody posted it.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's it, that's the one, that's the name. You know, that's it.
And you were fangirling all over
them. I was fangirling all over them. So it's great because it's educational, even though I've forgotten the name of it.
Yeah, but Instagram's the main place, isn't it? Like, Twitter has become a bit of a waste ground, hasn't it? Don't you think?
I feel that these days Twitter's a bit of a nothingness, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I guess it kind of ruined itself with people then moaning and arguing. And on Instagram, people don't really, because you don't really see the conversations on Instagram.
I think there
has
been a few spats on Instagram.
Yeah.
No, I never. I just stay out of it and do my thing, but I haven't seen
them. I think they're more hidden. You don't see them as readily, whereas, you know, Instagram, if you want to read the comments, you do, but they're not in your face like on Twitter, are they? So
yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and Facebook is kind of sort of there, but that then becomes littered with almost advertising.
There's a lot of advertising on Facebook. I do quite enjoy Facebook, but there's a lot of advertising. Instagram's my number one.
What about when it's listening to you, Ellen?
Oh, yeah. We've tested this theory that quite often we'd be talking about something and then a sponsored ad would come up on Facebook, maybe Instagram, about what we're discussing. We purposely at home discuss something that we would never have Googled or scrolled, or we don't like anything. So I think it was something to do with buying a sports car. Okay. I'm never going to buy a sports car, probably. But it's nothing I've ever looked at online.
You say probably. Is that because you're now inspired by the
ads? Yes, since I've seen the adverts, I thought, wow, that's swish. I'd like one of those.
Get in.
And we got adverts. So that's freaky.
Yeah.
So something's listening to you.
I don't mind that, but it is weird.
It's just weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't mind that because by having social media and putting yourself out there, then you are putting yourself out there and you know that these companies will use that data in a different way, and yeah, it's fine, but I hope it inspires you to buy a sports car, darling.
I don't think it's going to.
Yeah, because you've got a really pedestrian estate at the moment, haven't you?
it's my shed, because I haven't got a shed on the allotment yet.
You're a shed.
The Plant-Based Podcast is sponsored by Sutton's, suppliers of gardeners' favourite products since 1806. Unsurprisingly, Sutton's now have everything you need for your outside space. Award-winning flower and vegetable plants, garden furniture and equipment, plus gifts for gardeners. Visit them online at suttons.co.uk.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Plant-Based Podcast.
Have a browse of the rest of the library or hop on over to the website, which is theplantbasedpodcast.net.
You'll also find our social media links. Please connect with us and let us know about any plant-based projects that you think we should be covering on the show.
And make sure you subscribe to our podcast so you'll be the first to hear the next episode. We're releasing once a fortnight. So until next time, enjoy the world of plants.